Hey, Chicago, it's Mully here.
And David Haw. We're always starting your day with the best Chicago sports talk. Mornings 5:30 to 10 on The Score.
And don't forget, if you miss the show live, you can always get us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Catch every show, every hour, every segment of Mully and Haw on demand.
It's so easy. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Mully and Haw, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.
This hour is brought to you by Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Tim Jenkins.
I've got people real mad at me in Chicago that how dare you? There's a radio guy up there, Mike North. He was real mad.
Founder and CEO of Jenkins Elite.
I'm Tim Jenkins and welcome to All Things QB, where I watch every single clip and break down the most important ones today.
Breaking down the positives and negatives.
You've seen progressions that align with the quarterback's eye. I hope that's what we get more of, but I hope we continue to see some of these concepts and the way we build things are better for the quarterback versus just looks good on paper.
Tim Jenkins with Raheem and Harris with Mark Grody on Chicago Sports Radio. 670 The Score.
Let's jump into the film.
And we do so with Tim Jenkins, founder and CEO of Jenkins Elite. He works with quarterbacks. He can work with you at T Jenkins Elite on X. And he joins us via the Circa Sports Illinois hotline. Download the Circa app today. Tim, I feel like we're talking to you in a case where it's a little bit better today than it was on Tuesday of last week when it came to Caleb Williams' play. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit better for Caleb Williams. Unfortunately, this is why in the NFL you got to win the ones that you can at home, right? We let the Vikings one slip away, and then you go on the road in a what everybody knew was going to be a crazy environment. Right. And then you kind of you feel better about Caleb's performance. Right. Hey, his eyes were in a better spot. It felt like his feet were tied to his progression more. And then at the end of the day, it was like we got, you know, the doors blown off us. So to me, it's like now we're 0-2. You know, you hate being like, oh, hey, what we should be. But in reality, they should be 1-1 if they just finished the job at home on Monday night. Now you're sitting at 0-2. And you guys know how, you know, you start feeling like, OK, hey, we got to get rolling here soon. So that when things do start clicking on offense, we can make a run at the playoffs.
Tim, tell me what you think about Caleb Williams' performance in comparison to what we saw in week one, because I believe he played better.
Yeah, I think if you were to grade him out, and I know there's a lot of stuff floating around on Twitter, I'm going to say tongue-in-cheek about grades, but the what I'll tell you is if you were to grade him out, I think he played a lot better this week from – his feet were tied to his progression. So it wasn't like you saw him running his feet and he wasn't like he was rereading a concept. He was there. He was consistently, hey, working whatever his progression is on the play, right? 1-2-3. It felt like he was tied together there. Honestly, it felt like, and we kind of joked about it last time I came on, it felt like Ben Johnson circled back to some of the scripted calls, right? We called dig with a home run post three times. Now we dressed it up out of a different formation, but it felt like we were kind of going back to some of those scripted plays, which then led to him probably playing with more confidence and him being great with the football. Obviously, we have the two mistakes. One gets negated from the roughing where we just really can't have, right? Just like putting the ball in harm's way for no reason. But I do think from just playing within the structure of the offense, I thought it was better. It felt like we had less pre-snap penalties. We still had some, but it felt like we had less, which is hilarious that we go on the road and we have less pre-snap penalties. But yeah, I mean, for me, it's hard because I do think in the NFL, you get into these games where you get to two or three possession ball games. And it's like, yes, I think his eyes were in a better spot. I think his feet were calmer. Simultaneously, like, I'd be lying if I thought that we were getting exotic looks or if we were getting anything but shell coverage where it's like, you know, hey, let him hit this and then we'll go make a tackle because, again, they're playing to win a game. They don't play because they want to keep your box score to look terrible, right? So to me, it's like that's what I think is maybe tougher for me where it's like not, I'm not as optimistic as maybe I would be if this was a 7 or point ball game where you're like, oh, man, you know, we felt like we were still getting pressure looks. We felt like we were still getting things dialed up. You know, I'd be lying if I said it felt like that down the stretch from what we were getting defensively. With that being said, like Caleb can only play against what he's got, what he's going against. And I do think he looked cleaner overall working through these progressions.
I want to ask you about the eyes. You brought that up and Ben Johnson did say that the eyes are not always in the right place, and that doesn't mean it's not better relative to last week. But, Tim, what does that mean exactly?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not going to give you the PhD answer. What I'm going to give you is something to look for. When you watch NFL quarterbacks play, something that's really the way that you would know that someone doesn't understand what's going on this play is if he does what's called rereading something, meaning if you see a quarterback go from, like, let's say he's looking at DJ Moore off to his right, and then he scans more middle to Komet, and then you see him look back out to the right to DJ Moore, that's called rereading a concept. If somebody's rereading a concept, that means they're not sure where their eyes were to be or supposed to be, so they're just, like, essentially scanning to see who's open, right? They're playing Madden, which, as you guys know, is not realistic when the bullets are flying, the ball's got to be out in 3 seconds, right? We've got to work our progression the way it's supposed to. So that's, like, one way that you can kind of see it on TV, actually, of, oh, this guy's comfortable, or, oh, you know, hey, you know, we still have progress to make. In terms of, like, what Ben's saying, I'm assuming Ben's talking more, like, higher level of, you know, two shell, three shell, and a really quick, easy way is, you know, two shell means, hey, we got two guys back deep, right? Usually safeties. You know, three shell or single high coverage means you really have one safety back. Usually two corners is how you get to your three shell, but just one guy back could also be a single high. We have a lot of plays where it's a two shell, three shell, meaning, hey, we want you to look to this side against two shell, right? The two guys deep. Or if it's single high, we want you to work to this other side. That's what I would guess where Ben's like, hey, we had this play designed. They gave us a disguise coverage. He didn't get his eyes to the right spot. He got his eyes to what they were disguising, right? They were showing two. They snapped to one or three. And that's probably more what Ben's talking about. And that's what you can kind of see on the tape a little bit of, you know, you get an exotic pressure. It feels like maybe he gets back into that reread, back into that scanning type play. But I tell you, a lot of the stuff where it was like a called shot play, I felt like his eyes were a heck of a lot better this week than they were last week.
We are talking to Tim Jenkins. He of Tim Jenkins Elite. He reviews film. His breakdown of the Bears is out on YouTube right now. You can check that out. And he's on Twitch with us, twitch.tv/Chicago670 The Score, and Rahimi Harris and Grody. And Tim, not to go back to last week, but I do want to, because of something that you talked about on Twitter with Ryan Fitzpatrick. When you guys were going back and forth discussing the open, DJ Moore's open on the left side against Minnesota, could have been a touchdown. Caleb Williams did address it midweek. He did talk about how there was an adjustment there. I think DJ probably saw something where he knew he could be open, and that's what you're going to do, try to score. What was your takeaway from that play and just you two discussing it as well? Because I think you had different opinions.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people that were like, hey, it's a virtually impossible throw, right, with somebody changing it. If I'm being honest, I just disagree. I would point to a play this week of what Caleb did, the Rome double move, right? So you've got a double move where the corner grabs him, and what does Caleb do? Does he try to throw a perfect ball, or does he throw what we would call like a body-up shot, meaning like, hey, we won with scheme, basically, right? Let me just make sure I don't miss this. That's exactly what he throws. And I would make the argument, like, and this is just my perspective. Listen, I didn't have the career Fitz did, but just from coaching guys, what I could tell you is I think it's a heck of a lot harder to body up a throw where a defender makes contact so much that we get a flag on a double move than it is when we have a clean release. I think ultimately, and I think if you were really to get Caleb one-on-one and not in like a media environment and say, hey, obviously, we just need to body that throw up, meaning don't try to make the perfect throw to the pylon. You know, hold him up. Even if he gets tackled short, he gets tackled short. And that's what I come down on it. I mean, obviously, it's harder knowing the context of the fact that, hey, they had mirrored bench coming and, you know, DJ converts it to a go. Of course, that's harder. Mm-hmm. Simultaneously, you know, we have guys adjust routes based on broken coverages all day, every day across the National Football League. And we have quarterbacks making body up throws. Like, here's where I think this argument is tough for me. Nobody, and I don't know, maybe you guys would tell me, hey, I'm wrong. I don't think any of us four would tell you that we think Caleb Williams will either be sick. Like, he's not going to fail as an NFL quarterback because of lack of gifts.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
right.
Nobody's sitting here saying, I just don't even know if physically he can get it done. So we've agreed that he can rip the ball and do things with a football that there's not a lot of people that can do it.
And
then we can't then say, oh my gosh, the level of difficulty on that throw. Like, dude, that's the point. Like, that's the difference between a Caleb Williams or, you know, like a guy who grinds it out 14 years in the league, but, you know, isn't a first overall pick. That's the difference. Like, we took him number one because he can make insane throws. We can't then say, hey, we had DJ Moore wide open, but that's a really tough throw. Like, you got me under center? Sure. Call it a tough throw because I wouldn't have made it.
Right.
But like when you take these guys number one overall and we all agree he's got traits that are not common, we then have to expect throws like that to be able to be bodied up down the field because guess what? He'll go sprint to his right and throw it 48 yards on a dime. And like that's what he can do. So to me, it's like that's where I think the whole discussion kind of got blown out of context. And I get it. Like, you know, like right now it's like popular to be on one side of it. I don't think we know remotely what Caleb's going to be in this offense yet. Cause I just don't even think he's operating this offense yet. And that's okay. But to me, we still have to be able to say like, hey, I'm not going to say Caleb's the greatest ever. I'm not going to say he's a bust. I'm just going to evaluate the tape. Simultaneously, that's a throw that he's very capable of making. And I think like he would say that. And Ben Johnson sitting in the meeting room behind closed doors saying that. So to me, that's where I think that whole conversation, not with me and Ryan, but like everyone, I just think it got crazy.
Oh, and everybody has an opinion. If you get out there in those Twitter streets, if you will, or social media in general, I'm looking at what he's been able to do. And I know every week it's like we're revealing a little bit more of the puzzle and we're trying to solve the puzzle, right? You got another puzzle piece last week. Looking at that and knowing how Ben Johnson's offense looked in Detroit, and I know this is different because he's got different personnel, but do you feel like Caleb Williams took a step forward in that sense in terms of Ben Johnson's been a guy who says he's got to come to me? And I'm like, well, you got to tailor this thing around him too.
Yeah, I think operationally, I think Caleb probably took a step operationally. I'm guessing they were way cleaner with timing of motions and everything like that. It just looked more sound operationally. And I tell you that I think Ben kind of did come to him talking about, you know, hey, reloading some of those scripted calls.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, and this is, and you know, people are going to take this and run with it one way or another. The amount of times we got back to a scripted call, and again, we dressed it up differently, but it was the same concept, is very unusual.
Oh.
Like, that does not happen in the NFL in terms of, like, very rare. We saw, I think, the same play called three, maybe four times with that dig in the shot post.
Hmm.
You know, doing Denver, doing Miami, doing all these other teams, that is rare. Like, we do not see reloaded plays that often. You know, like, we were borderlining on where I would start to worry, and I'm coaching third grade tackle right now. You know what I mean? Like, I'm starting to think the kids are recognizing it. So I do think he was adjusting to kind of meet Caleb there of saying, hey, I know we've got all these shifts, we've got all these motions, we're running these out, all these different formations. Let me, you know, try to reload some of these concepts for you. So I think he did that. And I think Caleb probably took a step in the right direction. Ultimately, like, to me, the things that I walked away were he had a couple of misses where it was just like, man, we just can't miss this. This is a rhythm throw. Like, he's open. We got to take that. And then just the two decisions where, it more or less felt like he was being, you know, like, this is like a quarterback room, but like, it was almost like, hey, we were being disrespectful with like our, you know, reverence for the football. Like, we have to take care of the football. And the two INTs were kind of more or less just like lazy. And I think that's easy to clean up, you know, once you have those discussions.
You're listening to the Raheemy Harris and Grody Show on Chicago Sports Radio 670. The Score. We're talking to our QB expert, Tim Jenkins. I want to follow up on that because you're right, Tim. People are going to take that, what you just said, and run with it. So I think I'm going to ask you the question that a lot of people are going to be asking when you say that they reloaded some of the concepts and how rare it is to twice do scripted plays. Why are they needing to do that for Caleb Williams? Does that mean that he's not getting the rest of what Ben Johnson is laying down?
That's why
I want to nip this in the bud right now, Tim. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, like, yeah. I mean, and it's fine. I just, like, if I'm being honest, I don't think there's another way to interpret it, right? Yeah. Like, if you're reloading a play that we repped a bunch because it's scripted, there's no other way to interpret it other than, hey, we're not putting in a full, you know, 90 play game plan, right? We're going to put in 60. With that being said, do Is that like ultra concerning for me in week two? No. Yeah. And it's just because of the context of Caleb Williams. Like, you've got to think about this from like zoom out, big picture. There is no shot his youth football coach was coaching him. Caleb was just probably the best kid out there, running and throwing. Then in high school, he was, oh, I'm just going to ride this dude to a state. Right? Like, you guys know what it's like coming up in football for these generational guys. Like, and then, like, you know, again, I'm not trying to take a shot at Lincoln, but like, it's not the most complex thing in the world pre-snap, right? Because they're going fast. They're prioritizing going fast over winning with a shift in emotion. Then you get to the NFL and your rookie year was really a wash. Just like you potentially played for an offensive coordinator that I don't know if it's ever been confirmed, but doesn't script. Like, that's insane. We got to throw that out. So it's like the first time you've been asked to do this. And that's a lot. Like, it's a lot just to spit out the verbiage and then to handle everything and then have your eyes in the right spot on a PSL, two shell, three shell. Like, I know it's not popular because he gets paid so much money and he got taken number one overall to say, hey, we got to have patience, but like, it is what it is. So that's why I'm not concerned yet. If we're in week eight reloading, I'd start to say like, dang, that's concerning because we're not picking it up right at all. I'm just not concerned with it week two. And I think to me, it's like the coach has obviously decided, hey, this guy is, you know, let's just make sure his eyes are in the right spot. And like, listen, I tell you, we ran that play a bunch. The safety started to jump the dig route and he fitted in there. Right. And that's the piece of this that we're talking about of why you took him number one overall. Right. Like, you get a guy like me under center. Shoot, you better run 90 plays because the ball ain't going to get there fast. Right. So it's like the guy better be open. Caleb, you can reload stuff. And guess what? He's going to fit it in there. That to me is kind of more reconfirming of why you took him where you took him. And then now it's about developing him into who he should be. I don't want to go on too long, but I like have one comparison. It's like almost like Cam Newton, like watching Cam Newton's evolution. It was like he never got asked to play quarterback until he got to New England. And by then it was too late. But if we do this correctly and we develop Caleb as a quarterback with all these gifts, by the time that his quote unquote skill set starts to decrease, his mental aptitude will be so high that he will then have sustained success for the long term in Chicago versus like, hey, we had a great run with 4 years for him. And then like his gifts started to fade. So then, you know, hey, we couldn't overcome it. That's the point of developing these guys. So you don't have, you know, a Cam at the back half of his career. And that's what I think, like, we got to have the patience for. But I also get, like, it's the NFL, we're 0-2. Like, we got to win some football games.
Tim, I'm glad you did expand on that. That's exactly what we're looking for. So don't ever be afraid to go off.
I appreciate that. Yeah, sometimes, though, my wife tells me, you got to, you know, kind of calm down. You know, you're kind of holding court at the dinner table too much.
You know what? The Jenkins family is a well-oiled machine. I'm not here to mess up that flow. But here, no, we want that stuff. So thank you for doing it.
Well, I appreciate you guys. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Tim.
Thank you, Tim. That was Tim Jenkins, founder and CEO of Jenkins Elite. If you want more, check out his YouTube video. It came out last night. I got about a quarter of the way through it, but I had to listen to Ben Johnson. I was watching the Pirates and Cubs game. There was a lot happening.
That was good. Great. That stuff on Caleb was pretty amazing. By the way, Robbie, send over some dinner to the Jenkins family.
That's a large family.
Set them up. Yeah, set them up. Just send it right on over.
Eats, right?
You got that? Thank you.
Boneless buffalo wings for the kids.
It's all the way to Colorado.
He's getting some Klonopin as well.
That was Tim Jenkins. Coming up next on Rahimi and Harrison Grody, we have to talk about the massive conflict of interest in the NFL, where I'm pretty sure if it's anybody else, it doesn't happen. You're listening to the Rahimi Harrison Mark Grody Show on 670 The Score in the Odyssey and iHeartRadio app.
Hey, Chicago, it's Mully here.
And David Haw. We're always starting your day with the best Chicago sports talk. Mornings 5:30 to 10 on The Score.
And don't forget, if you miss the show live, you can always get us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Catch every show, every hour, every segment of Mully and Haw on demand.
It's so easy. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Mully and Haw, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.
Rahimi Harrison Grody, middays 10 a.m. to 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Chris, we've got a special member of the Raiders ownership group here today, and that's Tom Brady, who is in the house and is with the coach's box tonight. I was wondering how much Brady really had an involvement with this team. We hear so much about Brady as the owner. Chip Kelly told us that he talks to Brady 2 to 3 times a week. They go through film, they go through the game plan, and Brady is a luxury for the coaches. Who else has an owner who's actually been there and done that?
5% stake.
That's an amazing sight right there.
That's Peter Schrager from ESPN, and he's talking about Tom Brady being in the coach's box in the Raiders' loss last night to the Chargers. That was the second game of the Monday Night Football doubleheader. Chargers are now 2-0. They beat the Raiders 20-9. Perhaps if the Raiders had won, it would be even more incendiary today. If it were anybody else other than Tom Brady, I don't think it would be happening. And yet again, we find ourselves asking how much of Tom Brady's conflict of interest with being a partial owner of the Raiders is interfering with his job, where he is a lead analyst and is meeting with coaches every week for Fox Sports. Perhaps there's no better time to illustrate it. A picture is worth a thousand words. And in this case, that's a pretty damning image when you understand the conflict by seeing it with your eyes last night.
It's funny because Colts owner Carly Ursay Gordon also with the headset on during a game as an owner. And so I was like, I know that that happens, but I was like, she's not calling games and she doesn't, you know, own a team that's going to play the Bears next week either.
Carly Ursay is also not broadcasting a meeting with coaches every week for Fox.
It's
the
crazy
rights holder, like the ubiquitous NFL rights holder, you know?
So, you know, he's got that 10-year, $375 million deal, which is, you know, so sign me up if somebody's coming down the hallway offering that. But I think the conflict of interest is so strong. And you're right, Layla, when you talk about how incendiary it would have been if the Raiders had gotten off to a 2-0 start, my goodness, people would be up in arms. I am up in arms because I don't think this is fair. I don't think this is right. It's one thing that when I look at Ben Johnson and that group that's obviously 0-2, desperate for their first win of the season. Hopefully they get it this weekend against the Dallas Cowboys. But there's a possibility that they'll be 0-3 going up against Tom Brady, and he's going to be in these Zoom meetings or whatever with people from the Bears. And it's like something they have to actually think about and worry about.
Because the process is broadcasters meet with the Bears.
Uh-huh.
You know, they meet with the two teams that they are broadcasting, and that's where you get inside information. Famously, let's go back to the time Brian Griese talked about Nick Foles saying, oh, we can't block that play.
Right.
And that's on Monday Night Football. And then people were saying, oh, consider the source. Well, Griese said that for a reason. He may have been told that in confidence or off the record, but
yeah.
He wasn't saying anything that you weren't seeing. And that's why Brady meeting with Raiders offensive coordinator Chip Kelly 2 to 3 times a week. Like, this is not a silent ownership. This is very active, and that's why the conflict of interest is so high. In my opinion, if it's anybody other than Tom Brady, we wouldn't even be talking about
how
this.
How is he not?
It wouldn't even be happening.
You're right.
Can you imagine if it were Greg Olson? This wouldn't even be a discussion.
Is Tom Brady sabotaging himself? Honestly, like, nobody doesn't think this is a conflict of interest. Everybody who is reasonable, except for maybe the Raiders, realizes that this is maybe even the Raiders. Raiders are like, get out of the broadcast booth. That this is a conflict of interest.
Well, Fox.
Tom
Brady. Fox would be the other one.
Yeah,
right?
I guess so. And the 10 years, well, $350 million.
Yeah, not $100. $375.
Right. And they just smothered. They just said, bye, Greg Olson. You're really good. You might be the best analyst going right now in football, but bye-bye. See you later. I got to wonder, like, is Tom Brady long for the booth, and does Tom Brady care? Because, well, I think Tom Brady is decent at doing it. He's not great at doing it, and he's certainly not the best at doing it. I imagine that doesn't go over particularly well with Tom Brady. So I think maybe Tom Brady's sabotaging himself.
I've said this before, and I'll say it again. I think the reason Fox has Tom Brady in the booth is not just because of how he may see the game. What's funny is he had a really good clip recently go viral talking about the infrastructure he had as a quarterback developing. It was much, some people are better, you know, in longer forms,
yeah.
Formats like what we do. I feel like Tom Brady might be one of those, because what he had to say about learning how to be a quarterback with the Patriots was incredibly valuable, especially to us. We should get into it in another show. But in that space where he's commentating and it takes a certain amount of time and it's not the easiest thing to do because it's shorter, you have to be concise. I don't think he's here for us. We're watching the game no matter what. It's the Good Morning America crowd that wants to see Tom Brady on their TV. That's who they're appealing to. They're trying to get non-football fans to watch the game of the week. They're trying to grow the game. You do that by getting Tom Brady in, because a lot of people don't know a thing about the game of the week, but they know about Tom Brady.
Yeah, I understand it. I don't agree with it. I think it's a bad strategy. I asked why not put him on the pre and post game shows, and obviously he'd be at halftime of all the games on Fox. And he said, well, that's not what the money is poured into. It's poured into the actual games. Look at the ratings for those things versus the game itself. And my argument back to that is, I think the ratings would be a lot higher if you had Tom Brady giving that kind of information, like what he gave with Colin Cowherd, in a studio setting. I do think that that would raise the awareness, and people would tune in for Tom Brady, just like people watch White Sox games or don't watch White Sox games, but they'll check out Chuck and Ozzie and what they have to say.
Yeah,
it's always entertaining.
That's still a different subset. The people who watch White Sox games for the pre and post game show, the viewing habits of the, and you know, you and I were both local news anchors. The viewing habits of the people who watch a local newscast and make it to sports, because they, a lot of times people turn it off after weather. That's a completely different group. But if they knew Tom Brady was on at 10:20, then they'd keep it on. And that's I think, the goal of why he's there. The other side of this is, we all thought he was going to be a factor as to whether or not Ben Johnson was going to be the head coach here. Like, let's just address that. You know, we knew that Brady was involved in the interview process to an extent, or those were the reports anyway, in Las Vegas. You know, this is not a quiet ownership. This is a very active position for him, as you are seeing. And I think about that in this space as well.
I think you're also, when you have the conflict, the obvious conflict of interest that you're talking about, one would suspect, assume even, that he's holding back on things. There are things that he knows that he probably should express that he might be holding back on. That insults the sensibilities of any sports fan. We get that all the time. I get that all the time, or have throughout my career,
right,
as a reporter. Oh, Grody's protecting so-and-so. He's not eliciting the information he should. And sometimes we're guilty. Sometimes we are guilty of that. But we all get hit with that at times, because people are like, come on, don't tell me that. I mean, I got some of that earlier today with the Montez Sweat stuff, you know, which I was projecting him going forward, just that he sucks, that Montez Sweat sucks, and don't tell us that Montez Sweat is good because he hasn't been good. And my point was that I think he can be good going forward. But when you insult the, Layla, you're talking about the people that you might not otherwise watch. I'm protecting the people that are the real sports fans whose sensibilities can easily be insulted if you have somebody in the booth who is holding back and protecting people.
But those people are watching anyway.
That's it.
They're watching anyway. Watching. The diehards are going to watch. They don't care who's in the booth.
Well, no, you're right.
They would rather turn the sound down and just watch, because they're going to watch.
But people do. I think that's a little bit too. I think people do care about who's in the booth, because what do we do while we're watching the games? We critique the announcers. We talk about Tony Romo,
and we
has gotten
watching.
Crushed. We do, but don't say it doesn't matter, because it does. Tony Romo came out on fire in his career. Then what has happened since? People hate Tony Romo, or the critics do. Us, everybody, we all talk about.
Are you talking about his Cowboys career or his broadcasting
career? I'm talking
career?
About his broadcasting.
I feel like both. It could be either. It could be either.
Here we go.
But here we go, Chadwick.
But we do care. Like, you can't just turn on any game and have anybody in the booth. I didn't think the broadcasters for the Bears game were that great. I didn't think that Kenny Albert was rising to the occasion often during that game.
Neither did the Bears.
I know that. I'm talking about for both teams in that case. I'm like, come on, man. You're not getting up for that play, like that particular play. So we do. Like, we do care about who's broadcasting these
games. At the very least, they're disclosing it. At the very least, we know about. And frankly, there are some conflicts of interest in football and broadcasting that we don't know, or at least that are not disclosed. So I feel like in this case, at the very least, we, you know, it's being disclosed by Fox, and that work is out in the open when you see Tom Brady sitting there. You know, there's a difference between knowing he's there and then the camera's not going to him. I am not making excuses for this. I am just telling you the lengths that certain people go to hide these things.
This is.
So I think that's important to point out as well in all of this, because we're talking about it because we know about it.
This is the Tom Brady discussion and the conflict of interest here on Raheem Harris and Grody. And it's a great conversation because ultimately I don't think he's going to change. And that's what we kind of have to live with. And we're not comfortable with it and we hate it, but Tom Brady's going to be all up in our grills.
I think if there's one thing I've learned about watching the NFL, it's that stars get treated differently.
Oh, yeah.
And the biggest star gets the biggest different treatment. And there's no better example of that than what we're seeing right now. This doesn't fly for everybody. They can't let that happen for everyone.
Yeah, and that said, I like Tom. Like, I don't think he's the best at analyzing, but I think he's good at it. And I do like hearing what Tom Brady has to say because he is, by most accounts, the best quarterback we've ever seen. So it's interesting to hear what he's saying. But eventually, the plug is probably going to have to be pulled.
It is curious, though, as you mentioned, because, for example, Kevin Burkhardt, Tom Rinaldi, and Aaron Andrews all had to work and earn those positions on that broadcast in a different way. He did via his playing career. We know that. But when it came to the actual broadcast job, the thing they're doing now, that's the same thing they did before to get to that position.
And he doesn't know everything about broadcasting. He's not the GOAT when it comes to broadcasting.
And he'll admit that, though. He's very transparent about that. And he's not lacking the humility to say, I've got a lot to learn about this new thing that I'm doing. But because he is Tom Brady and because he has Tom Brady work ethic, I do expect him to get better if he continues down this road.
Yeah, I think the bigger question becomes, do the Raiders start winning more and then it's more of an issue? Mm-hmm. And if he does get better and you start to hear some of the information that comes out, it's like, well, where are you getting this? Like the Brian Griese example is probably the best one I can think of because that was incredibly valid to Bears fans. Yeah. We needed somebody to say it.
Thanks. Appreciate it. By the way, during our very serious and I thought poignant discussion on Tom Brady, did I see Jason Leisure dancing about in the hallway in front? I mean, I just caught it out of my peripheral.
He's working with Lawrence.
Yes.
Today.
No, I know.
Jason Leisure is in.
He just looks so happy and excited. So that's good to see that the Liege man is here.
He's probably excited about transition, if we're being honest.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Just to hang out with us.
That's, well, absolutely. Who wouldn't want it? We're the hangout show, right, Layla?
We are the hangout show. Can I tell you words that that might strike fear in some people's hearts?
Yes. Words.
If the phrase Olin Krutz is looking for you is said out loud, is that something that that you pause and wonder why, or you wonder where you need to hide?
Put some extra padding on.
Exactly.
Put your helmet. Put your mouthpiece in, as Wani would say. Put your mouthpiece in.
The word why would be out of my mouth as I'm backing away from wherever I am.
Well, Mark Grody, Olin Krutz was looking for you.
What?
So we're going to hear about it next on Raheem Harris and Grody on 670 The Score.
Oh boy.
Put your mouthpiece in, because here we go. Yeah.
Hey, Chicago, it's Mully here.
And David Haw. We're always starting your day with the best Chicago sports talk. Mornings 5:30 to 10 on The Score.
And don't forget, if you miss the show live, you can always get us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Catch every show, every hour, every segment of Mully and Haw on demand.
It's so easy. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Mully and Haw, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.
Raheem Harris and Grody, middays 10 a.m. to 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Ah, Grody!
So, the way this was brought up on Raheem Harris and Grody in our pre-show meeting, aka backstage, was that the question was issued to Mark, did you listen to the post-game show? And then it was, Olin was looking for you.
It's not good.
The face Grody made.
And apparently, oh, I'm sorry, it was not the postgame show because I listened and I didn't hear it. It was the pregame show.
Oh, the pregame show.
Yeah, he wanted you even before the game.
Oh, my goodness. So wait, did he talk about me in the postgame show too? Because I did not catch it because I was doing other things.
I don't know. I have a video or I have an audio montage here for Olin.
Uh-oh.
Producers, what say you, Robbie, Ray?
It was just the pregame.
Just the pregame? Okay.
Pregame.
That's how you say it, actually, pregame. I know people say pregame, but it's actually pregame. No, it's not.
Patrick, slippery slow,
Minnelli,
Mark Grody.
Patrick Minnelli.
Yeah,
Patrick Minnelli is one of my favorites. And Yalen Johnson.
Ben Johnson, too.
Yeah, Olin Krutz is pretty straightforward. There's not a lot to do with his name.
No, 57, yo.
Yes. So this was the pregame show, and Olin wanted to know where you were.
Uh-oh.
All right, we're going to head to Detroit. We'll bring in Chris Emma with a report.
Sweet.
from Ford Field. Next, you're listening
Grody
to...
Grody is voiding me.
Grody is ducking you.
Grody, man.
Well, they're playing on turf, so he doesn't give you the...
Yeah, yeah, but I want to put on his turf shoes and try it out. So now he's a star. Now he's on the score in the afternoon. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I think he's not there, to be honest with you. I don't think he's going to
Detroit.
Well, he
can't. He's working. He's doing too much.
He just does it. He just despises Detroit.
He'll probably be on TV tonight.
ESPN. He's always hated Motown.
Oh, wow.
Grody. No, that's not true.
I'll be on TV this Sunday, bud.
So Olin was right.
Oh, man. I'm overexposed. There's no doubt about it. Yeah, too much. Absolutely. But I love that Olin is like, look, that just a little background on Olin and I always have something that goes on between us on the air during these pregame hits, which sometimes are just hilarious. 2 years ago or 3 years ago now, it was Demir Byrd, who was a Bears wide receiver, who made like a really spectacular play. So I was just all about Demir Byrd. He's, okay, Grody, with Demir Byrd, get out of here with your Demir. So we had old Demir Byrd year, and then last year...
The year of Demir Byrd.
Yeah, the year of Demir Byrd, right, Olin? And then last year, don't remember how it started, but I think I gave a turf report without those guys asking, and for some reason, Olin got a big kick out of me acting like I had expertise on field conditions. So every week, he's like, okay, Grody, what about that field? How's that field looking down there? So that was every... And then the opening day, the field sucked because of all the concerts that I went to, the System of a Down field, and I was nowhere to be found. So I think that's why Olin's looking for me. I might be wrong. It could be something that I don't even know about, but I think that's why Olin's been looking for me, and I will be making my 2025 debut on the Score Bears pregame show, I don't even know how we're supposed to say it, but the football pregame show from Soldier Field. So stand by for that.
Grody.
Yeah,
well, there's more.
There is.
So poor Chris Emma's trying to get through his report. Let's listen.
Do you know Mark Grody's designation for today's game? Because I noticed that you're up.
No? Mark Grody is active and ready to go as always.
All right, all right, all right.
They didn't let me go to Detroit. What am I supposed to tell you?
The way he said you're up to Emma, because you're here.
Next man up.
Poor Emma. Here's Chris Emma. Where's Grody?
It's a pillow.
It's a pillow.
So he's like, because you're up? And then Olin also had some thoughts about our friend Big Ant Heron.
The most amazing man in Chicago media, Anthony Horan, Big Ant.
Yeah.
A legend.
He's everywhere.
Himself. He's everywhere. You don't have to play. You don't have to play for the Bears. You can have all the jobs.
Oh, wow. So a little bit of shade there.
Yeah,
okay, okay.
Yeah, Big Ant had to overcome his non-Bearsness. Yeah. That is true, man.
Dude, but he's from here. Olin was
it's like Clay
on
Harbor,
one.
You know? Yeah. Clay Harbor, same thing. But he has. He's a big star now. Both of them are.
They're both from the area.
Of course.
Well, but they have downstate.
But they have to convince people of that because they didn't play for the
Bears.
Is
it Clay from way up there?
No, he's from Dwight. Dwight, Illinois.
I was thinking he was from Libertyville.
It's halfway to Illinois State University.
Yeah,
I went through Dwight. I've been there. They have a women's prison.
Can't wait to go to Illinois
Center.
State University.
Yeah,
can't
man.
Wait.
I'll take you guys down there. We'll go to the pub. We'll get some
cheese
balls.
I want to go to pub, too.
Let's go to pub, too. I would love to take you guys to ISU sometimes. I think it would make you guys want to be more academic, I think. I think that's what would happen.
Grody, are you proposing taking Clay to the women's correctional facility for a visit?
No!
Did I just hear that correctly?
Yes, you did.
No,
bro.
He knows. Clay Harbor knows this. Dwight, Illinois, is best known for the fact that they have a women's correctional center there. He knows it. That's what it's known for.
Maybe he's saving himself for one of those lovely ladies. He's waiting for his girl to get released.
I mean, like, when they're free, they're ready, man. It's like,
are you speaking from experience, Grody?
No, I'm just assuming.
Why did you say it that way?
Well, wouldn't anybody who was locked up for, let's say, 5 years, wouldn't you be ready?
Go from locked up being locked up. You going to lock them up, Grody?
Yeah, well, you know what I'm
saying? Lock you one down?
Locked. Yeah, it's on lockdown.
You got any pen pals, Grody?
Go get him,
man. You're going to start getting letters in the mail now,
no,
Grody.
But I'm willing to try. I am willing to be of service.
If you are listening.
Dear God. Why did you put it that way?
Yeah. No, it's. I get it. If you're listening on the Odyssey app and happen to be in Dwight. And
shout out to Dwight. I was just driving through Dwight the other day.
312 says the women's prison in Dwight is closed.
What?
847
what?
Says Dwight Country what? Club is awesome. So we've got Dwight all wrong.
Pontiac has a men's maximum facility, and that is in the general. general area too. Am I right about that?
You want to do some more solicitation?
Yeah. So yeah. Oh yeah. Dave, I like to be equal opportunity for the men, for the women. I did not know that the correctional center had closed in Dwight, Illinois. This is very upsetting.
I see that tear forming in the corner of your eye.
Yeah. I knew people who worked there when I worked in Lincoln, Illinois.
I bet you did.
I knew there was a gentleman that worked part-time at the radio station that I worked at, and he also worked part-time at either Dwight or Pontiac, one of those two. So I understand the prison system in Central Illinois. Apparently I don't, though, because Dwight is closed.
I was just going to let you work through it.
Yeah, you guys don't know where to go from here, do you?
I was just going to let you work through it and then point out that at one point I think Ronji and I had schemed up a fiendish plan to take respective trains to hang out and watch a game at Pub 2, and I was going to promote him to the girls at the bar saying, please meet my friend, he has a job.
Wow. So you never made it there? The Ronj never got you to the pub?
Well, you know, making plays with Ronji is like herding cats. So,
Why you got to use that as an example?
You know he's going to be sensitive about anything.
I know. But like, have you tried to herd Dave? Was it easy?
No, I would never hurt Dave.
Dave goes where he wants. Herd cats.
Yeah, it's impossible to hurt. Oh, so you herd. I thought you said hurt.
No, why would I talk about herding cats?
No, that's what my sensitive brain heard.
Herding cats.
Got you. I'm sorry.
Trying to make a plan with Chris is like trying to herd a cat.
Okay. You're right, Layla. I'm sorry.
But I had a really good wing woman pitch where I was like, hey, my friend has a job.
Oh, that's all it takes?
Is that all it takes?
In a college bar?
Wow.
Well,
that's
you
a
need?
Good point. Yeah.
Is he over 6 foot?
Yeah.
That helps.
Yeah, but how old was Ronji then? Was going to go down?
It's like 2 years ago.
Okay, so that's creepy then, if you're going to set him up with a 20-year-old.
Layla, go ahead.
And I'm not going to do that, so somebody else should.
50? Like, you know, so you got to be careful.
50?
Yeah, yeah, Ronji's about
Daddy 50. Needs a sleep.
Gross. What is
maybe 48.
You can't say that at the bar.
Maybe he's under. Maybe he's a tick under 50.
I thought he was younger than us.
He is.
No, he's
younger
not.
Than me.
Us
I'm older than Ronji. Yeah. I'm an old.
My goodness.
I admit I'm an old.
Yeah, but you have it more together.
I would never say I have it more together than anybody.
No, because
you have a job.
Well, so does Ronji. Ronji's
got
a really good job.
Yeah, they both have jobs, actually.
Oh. Yeah. I'm Mark Grody Light.
All right, that's
there you
amazing.
Go. We're both settled. Hey, we're both ISU Hall of Famers. That's all that needs to be said.
I like the comment.
Somehow,
maybe that's the line we use at Pub 2 for you too.
How you doing, baby? You listen to AM radio?
Yeah.
Yes, oh yeah. You like
perfect.
AM radio?
I'll take the cheese curds and sit and watch football. These are my friends.
You're the second Illinois State Hall of Famer I've worked with.
Oh wow, who was the other?
Krista Rock.
Oh, who?
The legend.
Oh yes,
the legend.
Krista should be in the Hall of Fame.
Krista, yes. Is she? Is she in
She's
the Hall?
In the Hall of Fame. Yeah.
I did not know that Krista was in. Congratulations, Krista. She's the best.
She
great
is the
story.
Best. Somehow we took it from Olin to jail to Ronji to Krista Rock.
Wow.
To the Hall of Fame.
You could tell we're at the end of our show.
Indeed.
Did you see Lawrence has been pacing? We got Jason Leisure's pacing.
Like Chris Tannehill looks uneasy.
Let him pace.
Tanny's ready. Yeah.
No,
Tanny's ready to go.
We got to break. That's the thing.
Yeah, they get the show next.
Yeah. Look at Leisure out there stretching, getting ready to go. Come on now. Come
on
now.
Wish he had tearaway warm-ups.
Let's go,
that
Leisure.
Would make it more.
Let's go, baby. He's got the good shoes on. Nice. I like it all.
Hey, Chicago, it's Mully here.
And David Haw. We're always starting your day with the best Chicago sports talk. Mornings 5:30 to 10 on The Score.
And don't forget, if you miss the show live, you can always get us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Catch every show, every hour, every segment of Mully and Haw on demand.
It's so easy. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Mully and Haw, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.